This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for January 21st, 2010. On today's Radioactive, we have an action alert from the Natural Resources Council of Maine regarding public hearings in Augusta tomorrow, and an announcement about a new coalition of groups working together to abolish the abuses of solitary confinement in Maine's prisons. The Natural Resources Council of Maine, or NRCM, is calling upon its membership to attend public hearings in Augusta tomorrow on what it calls three of the most important bills of this legislative session. Matt Prendeville, the project director of the Toxics and Clean Production Campaign at the NRCM, is with us today to tell us why they consider LD 1662, 1631, and 1568 to be so important. Welcome back to Radioactive, Matt.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to be on Radioactive and WERU as always.
So tell us about this campaign that you're working on and where these bills fit in and why you're considering them to be so important.
Sure. Well, tomorrow is a huge day for Maine's environment and the health of our people. There are three very important bills that are in front of the Natural Resources Committee at the State House tomorrow. The first one would protect the health of Maine people by expanding our ban on the toxic chemical DECA. So it would keep it out of the environment, keep it out of our bodies. The second bill is working to create a sustainable solid waste policy for the state of Maine. And the third bill would promote cleaner air by substituting and switching to cleaner fuel for home heating oil. So there are three very important bills, and we're expecting a lot of our members and the members of other environmental organizations to show up tomorrow and show good support for these bills to move them forward.
Now, we were talking as we were setting up this interview about the last time, I think it was, that you were on Radioactive, and we were talking about DECA years ago. So why is this being revisited?
Sure. Well, your listeners might remember that DECA is a commercial flame retardant that was formerly used in consumer products. It was used heavily in television sets and computers, and was also beginning to be used in home furnishings and mattresses. And the reason why we were concerned about DECA in 2007 and why we banned it is because DECA is one of these what they call PBT chemicals, which now that's jargon, but basically what it means is that the chemical is persistent. It's long lived in the environment. It doesn't break down. It's bioaccumulative, so it builds up in the food chain. It's fat soluble and builds up in the food chain to higher and higher levels, and it's toxic. In this case, the science shows that DECA is a neurodevelopmental toxicant, and what that means is that it is toxic to the developing brains of children, and pregnant women can accumulate this chemical in their bodies, and they can expose their children unwittingly just from the food that they ingest, just from being in your indoor environment that might have products which contain this chemical. So in 2007, we were one of the first states in the country to ban this chemical for use in consumer products. Unfortunately, what the bromine chemical industry did is they said, well, we can't put it in consumer products anymore because Maine and California and Washington and all these other states have passed these bans. So let's put it into something that's not a consumer product. So they started putting it into plastic shipping pallets. And one of the uses for plastic shipping pallets is to transport food. And this is completely abominable. And we are working on this legislation, and we anticipate that we're going to have a high degree of success. We're going to make sure that this chemical gets out of pallets, gets out of the environment, and gets out of our bodies.
And so people are still handling these. People who unload the trucks or stock the shelves or whatever must still be coming in direct contact with this.
That's exactly right. And you know, one of the things that we found out when we started digging deeper into this issue is that, you know, the former market for DECA in consumer products was over 100 million pounds, and we basically killed the market for that with the law that was passed in 2007. Now, you know, with the expansion of DECA for use in plastic shipping pallets, that number could quickly be eclipsed. The amount of pounds put into the pallets could quickly eclipse anything that was formerly put into consumer products, and that's why we're so concerned, and that's why we're working on this piece of legislation.
Now, wasn't it originally marketed as a flame retardant? That's why it was included in things like children's clothing and bedding. And first off, is that correct? Isn't that part of
That's exactly right. It was marketed as a flame retardant. This and other similar kind of flame retardant chemicals that are either based on bromine or based on chlorine were used, as you mentioned, formerly in children's pajamas, in bedding, and in other kinds of products. And since then, because there's been this big push to reform our nation's chemicals policy system, and starting with the great leadership of legislators and folks working here in Maine to pass a number of important bills, we have really diminished the market for these toxic flame retardants. And the good news is that there are safer alternatives. There are safer alternatives to toxic chemicals for a number of these different products. And some of them are chemically based, like, for example, in television sets, there was a safer flame retardant chemical that was used. Some of them aren't even chemically based at all. So with mattresses, rather than using chemical flame retardants, there were technologies, even wool, like old technologies like wool, for example. You have a wool mattress cover that's actually naturally quite flame retardant. And there's other barrier technologies which aren't chemically based at all, which can help make a product fire safe. And so that's what we've been advocating, and that's really the foundation of good chemicals policy that we're promoting here in the state, and that we're also working on at the federal level, is to ensure that toxic chemicals are identified and that they're phased out in favor of safer alternative chemicals or safer production processes, which render the use of the chemical totally unnecessary.
Well, if it was marketed as a flame retardant in the past, how are they marketing it now for the plastic food pallets? Obviously, those being flammable is not a huge concern. Or is it that they make the food pallets themselves and so they just include it in there? I'm trying to figure out what the logic is, if there is any
behind
this. Yeah,
you know, there's an unholy alliance. There's so much. The deeper you dig in this issue, you begin to realize that there is this unholy alliance with the bromine chemical industry and the people that help to set fire safety standards for certain kinds of products. And it has nothing to do with science, and it has nothing to do with even legislative bodies, because oftentimes these regulations, and they're voluntary industry regulations for the most part that mandate or create the demand for these toxic flame retardants. The issue is that all these negotiations are done behind closed doors. So it's the bromine chemical industry, you know, working with elements of the fire safety community to find markets for their products, and that's a big problem. And so the plastic pallet manufacturers are, you know, the latest to be roped into this. But, you know, we're trying to shed some light on that. I mean, what's been really great is how incredible the firefighting community here in Maine and around the country has been, because the firefighters are the first ones to point out that they know that DECA is toxic. One of the interesting things is that when DECA burns, or the chemicals like it that are put into products burn, they create a toxic gas in the place where the fire is. So their initial purpose is to prevent fires from happening, but once the fire gets going, they can actually create a toxic gas in the home. And so firefighters are exposed to a lot of these toxic brominated compounds when they're fighting fires. And so when they found out that there are safer alternatives to these chemicals, they've been on the front lines, you know, working with us to try to move these toxic brominated flame retardants like DECA out of the marketplace in favor of safer alternatives.
Who makes DECA?
There's about four chemical manufacturers in the world that make this. Albemarle and Chemtura are two of the American-based companies. One's based in Louisiana, and the other one is based in the Midwest. And then there's a Japanese company called Toso, and there's an Israeli company called Dead Sea. I believe it's Dead Sea Chemical. And the issue is, and this is for a lot of these chemicals, is that because we have not had an adequate and appropriate chemical safety system at the federal level, there's been virtually no scrutiny on these chemicals. These were brominated flame retardants were first synthesized back in the 50s and 60s, and they came into heavy use in the 70s. Our first attempt that federal regulation of chemicals happened in 1976, and it grandfathered all of the chemicals previous to this law's enactment. It's called the Toxic Substance Control Act. It grandfathered over 65,000 chemicals from any kind of regulatory scrutiny whatsoever. And these are chemicals like bisphenol A, like phthalates, like perfluorinated chemicals, the Scotchgard and Teflon chemicals. All these chemicals have been getting, you know, a lot of press in the news lately because the toxicity data is getting out there, and people in the public are saying, God, I thought somebody was minding the store to make sure that these toxic chemicals weren't getting into products. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's why we're working on these important policies.
And at the same time, the rates of autism and developmental disabilities and cancers have just been shooting through the roof. So DECA is something that they are trying to, is it sell stockpiles of? Is there any chance? I mean, you say they're still trying to market this somehow, get it into something. Is it because they have some left over, or is it so profitable they want to keep making it?
Yeah, well, the issue for these guys is that, again, they're really wedded to this old technology that's based on bromine chemistry. And so they actually have just, because of the pressure of the Maine law and the other laws that have been duplicated around the country that have been targeted at chemicals like DECA, they are now entering into a voluntary agreement with EPA just to start to phase it out. Now, a big reason is because our good Congresswoman, Representative Shelley Pingree, is taking the work of her daughter, Speaker Hannah Pingree, who was the sponsor of the DECA legislation in 2007. Shelley is now taking that bill nationally, and the day this is no coincidence, but the day before she announced her bill last month on December, I think it was 17th, the bromine chemical industry announced their voluntary agreement to start phasing it out. Now, we don't really trust these guys because just a few years ago, they spent over $1 million, literally over $1 million. Nobody in the state had ever seen anything like this on an issue-based campaign in the legislature. They spent over $1 million to try to kill this bill. They're announcing a voluntary phase out today, but we don't trust them, and again we want to make sure that the DECA that's used in pallets gets phased out on a quick timeline. The other issue is that all these guys have to do under current law in current United States law is to change one of the you move a few bromine atoms out of the molecule and it's not DECA anymore, and so they can just tweak the formulation and say, well, it's not DECA anymore, it's a new brominated flame retardant, it's safer, trust us. And the reality of it is that the problem is that bromine-based chemistry is not safe with regards to flame retardant technology. And so we're going to make sure, and that's in the bill, that whatever is substituted for DECA is actually safer and is actually going to protect the health of our people and protect the health of wildlife.
Hmm. And speaking of Hannah Pingree, she is one of the people who participated in that body burden survey that took place a couple of years back, where several people had their blood tested to see what kinds of chemicals and toxins they had in them. I don't remember what her DECA level was, or if she registered for that, but people were very surprised at the level of these different toxins that were found in their bloodstreams, even people who are organic farmers and, you know, seemingly eating really healthy food, living healthy lifestyles.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the two big chemicals that we're concerned about, the two big classes of chemicals, as I mentioned, that we're concerned about are these PBT chemicals, these persistent, you know, long-lived in the environment, building up in the food chain, toxic chemicals, of which DECA is one. And the other class are these endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and these are the chemicals like bisphenol A, which a lot of people have heard about, and the controversy, one of the big controversies is that the lining of food cans is oftentimes coated with this bisphenol A epoxy resin, and we're getting trace amounts of it in our bodies every time we eat food from cans. So that's a huge issue, and you know, we want to make sure that that there are policies in place that are actually identifying toxic chemicals, moving the toxic ones out of production in favor of safer alternatives. And we also want to make sure that there's adequate screening of chemicals before they're put on the marketplace. Right now, in the United States of America, all a chemical manufacturer has to do is give EPA a 3-month notice that they're putting a new chemical on the marketplace. That's it. They don't have to provide any health and safety testing data to EPA. They just have to let them know that, hey, this chemical is coming. We think it's a great product, and you know, it's going on the marketplace. And EPA can, you know, petition for, well, can you provide us some more evidence? But they hardly ever do. They're woefully understaffed in this area, and so that's one of the main reasons why we need federal reform. I mean, and since TSCA, the Toxic Substance Control Act, was enacted in 1976, there's only been 5 chemicals that have been restricted. Out of the 80,000 some odd chemicals in commerce, only 5 chemicals have been restricted. And these are chemicals like DDT, which was causing eggshell thinning, and we almost lost the bald eagle and peregrine falcon because of this chemical. You know, PCBs, which were, you know, documented to be causing cancer in workers and reproductive defects. And so the policies are literally based on waiting for the body count to happen before action is taken.
And proving that the body count is connected to that particular chemical, which is
exactly
a very hard
right.
step. Right. Well, so that is LD 1568 that's going to be heard before the Natural Resources Committee tomorrow. There are 2 others that are having public hearings, and we have just a few more minutes left. Do you want to say a little bit more about either of them, 1662 or 1631?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll start with the Hayes bill, because that's a very simple bill. I mean, basically what this bill is about is promoting cleaner air by requiring cleaner heating oil. And I think a lot of people's minds, well, is that going to make my heating oil more expensive? It's actually not. And the good news is that, you know, refiners are promoting this cleaner oil. The EPA is fully behind this, and they're working regionally to try to get this oil out there in the marketplace. And it gives a long transition period, so we can move away from the dirtier fuel oil to this cleaner fuel oil. And what that's going to mean is it's going to mean less ozone days during the summertime. You're going to hear less of those warnings on the radio that you shouldn't go out and ride your bike on this beautiful sunny day because of the toxic air. It's going to mean less asthma attacks for Maine people. We have one of the highest asthma rates in the country, due in large part to what's coming from the Midwest and up the coast. But we also have a lot of in-state air pollution as well, just from driving our cars and from heating our homes. And so this is really going to help contribute to less asthma attacks. You know, it's the right thing to do. And we're moving towards cleaner fuel, and what that's going to do is help us all to breathe a little bit easier. I mean, this bill is good news for everyone who breathes, and we think that that it's also going to be passed with some good support in the State House. The other bill is this is 1631, and this bill builds off the success of Maine's existing product stewardship laws. So a lot of your listeners might remember that, you know, years ago we've been working on all these laws to get mercury products like thermostats and light bulbs out of the waste stream so that they don't wind up in landfills or incinerators. We also worked on laws to get electronics products like computers and television sets and cell phones and printers and even video game consoles out of the waste stream because they do contain toxic materials and because it's just a waste. I mean, there's a lot of great recoverable materials in these products that if you get them out of the landfills and get them out of the incinerators and direct them to a recycler, they can form the building block for a new product. And so fundamentally what this bill is about is about sustainability. It's about identifying new products in the waste stream that have the potential to be recycled and setting up a manufacturer-funded collection and recycling program for those products. And not only does it help promote sustainability, but it also helps to reduce the burden on towns for paying to deal with society's unwanted products. Last year, we spent about $90 million to dispose of over 1 billion pounds of trash right here in the state of Maine. And all of the cost for that is being borne by local governments. So, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, whatever new products becomes the hot product, like all the iPhones and the iPods that are out there, you know, when people, when those get dinged up, dropped, or they don't work anymore, oftentimes they're just going into the trash. And not only is that getting toxic materials in the environment, not only is it a waste of materials, but it's also costing towns money to dispose of the stuff. And so by having a process to identify which products should be the next products to be considered for these product stewardship programs, we can really help them move this stuff out of the waste stream, move it into the next stage of production and remanufacturing, lower costs for towns and municipal governments, and even create jobs. Because if you think about it, I mean, when you send a product to the landfill, there's no job creation there. It's just hauled off and disposed of. But if you're separating that product from the waste stream, if you're transporting it down to a recycler, if you're recycling it appropriately, and if you're turning that product and remanufacturing, you know, that product into a new product, there's a lot of jobs that are created along the way. And that's why, you know, we're supporting this legislation. That's why there's a big coalition that's working on this bill, and we're really excited about it.
All right. So in wrapping up, what time are the hearings? Where and where can people get more information and get in touch with you?
Sure. The hearings are at the Natural Resources Committee in the Cross State Office Building. It's the building that's directly behind the State House. They start at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they're in room 214A, which is on the second floor of the Cross State Office Building. If folks want to get a hold of me, you can reach me at the office at 430-0144. That's 430-0144. Or you can email me at matt@nrcm.org.
All right. That's Matt Prendeville of the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Thanks for talking with us today, Matt.
No problem, Amy. Always good to talk with you.
You're listening to Radioactive on WERU. This morning in Augusta, a coalition of groups announced that they are going to be working together to support LD 1611, an act to ensure the humane treatment of special management unit prisoners. Among them was Emily Posner of Mainers Against the Abuse of Solitary Confinement. We spoke with her earlier today.
Since this process first began and we first started exploring legislation, to look at this issue back in August, we've seen a number of organizations throughout the state come on board in support of our effort to limit the use and abuse of solitary confinement in Maine prisons. So today in Augusta, we saw the Maine Council of Churches, the Maine Civil Liberties Union, Mainers Against the Abuse of Solitary Confinement, a professor from Bowdoin College, the Maine Jeremiah Project, and the Maine Association of Psychologists all come and offer their support in LD 1611, which is actually entitled An Act to Ensure the Humane Treatment of Special Management Prisoners.
And I just want to jump back to some of the people that you said were involved. It sounds like someone's there representing the Maine Psychological Association saying that the abuses can constitute torture.
Yeah, they were there expressing serious concern about the long-term and short-term psychological impacts of being in solitary confinement and calling for change to take place within our policy and to change the policy that's on the books today.
Right. There's a good deal of research out there about some of the impacts that long-term solitary confinement can have, and it looks like a range of different interests were represented in this coalition. So what will you be doing, trying to educate people or pushing for the legislation, or what are the next steps now that so many people are on board with this and getting it passed?
Well, the next step is obviously to continue getting more people on board. We have a public hearing that's been set in Augusta for February 17th at 1 p.m. Folks who are interested in getting involved, please let us know. You can find out more about our coalition at maineprisonjustice.org. We're certainly trying to get as many constituents active from throughout the state, in particular constituents whose representatives or senators are on the Criminal Justice Committee, so that we can get a bipartisan report out of the committee, because this is certainly, human rights are not a partisan issue. And we're really just trying to find folks from every corner of the state who are interested in making this important policy change to work with us.
And speaking of representatives, of course, Jim Schatz is from Blue Hill. He's one of the people that we interviewed about this before, and he is the sponsor of this bill. What other committee members might be in the WERU listening range? Do you have a handle on that in terms of people contacting their legislators? Are there people that you recommend that Mid-Coast and Down East Maine get in touch with in addition to Representative Schatz?
Yes, unfortunately, the lady whose name there's a woman on the Criminal Justice Committee, a representative from the Searsport, Verona Island area, who is on that committee. And if you're in that area, please contact her. Otherwise, I don't think that on the coastal regions there are other folks who are on the Criminal Justice Committee, but that doesn't mean that those representatives are not going to need to be contacted once this issue gets to the floor. So if you have some energy and you want to work on this important policy change now, please feel free to get in contact with us.
And in addition to working on the legislation, you have some education opportunities, some speaking dates coming up. Do you want to tell us about when those will be and where and who's going to be talking?
Absolutely. We are super privileged to have Robert King from Louisiana coming up to visit the state of Maine in the middle of February. Robert King is one of the three members of the Angola 3. He spent 29 years in solitary confinement in Angola State Penitentiary, one of the most notorious and bloodiest prisons in the United States. And Robert will be speaking in Portland on February 10th at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Congress Street. He'll be speaking at the University of Maine Farmington on February 11th, and we're still looking to potentially book him at another location.
And you're looking, how would people get in touch if they were interested in helping you out with that?
Give me a call, 930-5232.
All right. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk with you a bit more next week on Radioactive and get into this whole campaign in more detail. We knew we had limited time today, so we decided to just focus on the announcements this morning about the coalition and some of the dates and things that are happening. But in the minute or two we have left, Emily, is there anything that you want to add?
I'm just really thrilled that that the people of Maine have really helped make this initiative happen. If it wasn't for everyone out there who's already written letters and called their congressional reps here in Augusta, then we wouldn't have even been to this place. We wouldn't have gotten this bill through the Legislative Council. And so, you know, the next step is to get a bipartisan report out of committee and then get this bill to the floor. And thank you all, Maine, for really taking a stand and saying that we don't torture our own residents.
Thanks for talking with us today. That's Emily Posner of Mainers Against the Abuse of Solitary Confinement. And the website, again, is maineprisonjustice.org. And your phone number, 930-5232, if people want to get in touch about helping out?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
And that's Radioactive for today. Radioactive is a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown. Meredith DeFrancesco will be back with us next week. You can reach us by emailing news@weru.org. This program, along with all of WERU's locally produced news and public affairs programs, is archived at the website weru.org. Just click on the Audio Archives tab. Thanks for listening and acting.